Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So welcome back to the Rick Shields podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Rick Shields, here with producer Guy, and we have a guest to the podcast today, Guy. And it's a returning guest as well.
He's a friend of the show. If he makes it to three times, he gets a signed Rick Shields Pro V1 that he can keep as a match ball.
He'd basically become a co-host if he was on three times, because we're only on 35 podcasts. So welcome, John Robbins.
Hi, everyone. Nice to be back. Thank you so much for having me.
It's good to have you back. Now, last time you were here, we've just been debating it. I can't remember if it was this year, now, or last year. Was it the start of this year?
Yeah, it was early this year. Pre-lockdown video we filmed.
Feels like the world has changed a lot since that.
So has John Robbins, to be fair, though, and his golfing ability, which we'll come on to in more depth throughout the episode.
I know. So when John last came up, so if you don't know John, he has a YouTube channel with his friend Alex Horn, and it's called Bad Golf, where the both of them basically make a channel about playing bad golf, right? Is that an easy description?
Yeah, we play around a month together. We're probably, when we started, both off about 25, 26. And we just wanted to have footage of people who played like us on YouTube, basically. huge fans of yours, obviously. But we would probably have more shanks in three holes than you would have in an entire year's worth of filming.
Certainly that make the cut anyway.
True.
Shanks do not make the cut for my channel. No, it's great to have you back on. Last time you were here, we did a little cool video where I played with just one club, you played with all of your set, and we had a really good match where you nearly got your first ever hole in one and nearly had the first ever hole in one that was documented on video, unbelievably close at the seventh hole of Marriott Worsley Park.
I like how Rick said a little video. That video has now amassed 1.5 million views on YouTube.
Is it really?
Do you know what I mean? Just a little thing we put together. No big deal. And in fairness, we were debating even going out that day, because if you remember, the weather was horrendous. So we actually wasn't sure if we were going to even get out on the golf course.
Yeah.
And talking about horrendous weather, today we're supposed to be filming. And today, again, as John comes all the way up from Bristol, it is again torrential rain today. So we don't know what plans are for filming today. We were hoping to do another video, but we've not. We're debating whether to do it. So at the moment, we are, just to set the scene, we're in a conference room in a hotel in Haydock, just off the East Lancs. And here we are with John.
Because we played yesterday, didn't we, in a charity match?
We played yesterday, which we definitely need to talk about.
We do.
And we've got loads to talk about today. So, like, this is going to be a really cool podcast. John is so interesting to talk to. Like I say, with his mate Alex Horn, you are professional comedians.
Yes, well, we were until about March the 22nd this year. And then we have become a professional home recorder. And Alex, he did a sort of a lockdown show with Peter Crouch, and he's also filming the next Taskmaster series. But I haven't set foot on stage for nearly 6 months, which is terrifying.
The upside of that, though, which I witnessed yesterday, is your golf has improved leaps and bounds.
Well, I said to my coach, he's leaving the club I've just joined, and I said to him, it's...
What have you done to him?
I said, it's testimony to your skill as a coach that since our first lesson, I've lost 6 shots off my handicap, and that happened when the club was closed for 2 months.
That's impressive.
I basically had a series of epiphanies during lockdown. I read a couple of books, and then I came up with a way of breaking 90 that I managed to do within 3 rounds of lockdown easing. And for people who don't know or haven't watched my channel, I basically started taking golf more seriously about 4 years ago. And I would have been of about 26 when I first started back. And that stayed the same. No matter how much I practiced, no matter how good my good shots got, I was driving myself crazy because I was still hitting, you know, 100, 105, 95, got to 90 a few times. And I was getting obsessed with breaking 90. And actually, the time away from golf gave me just a period of reflection to really actually analyze why I wasn't playing to my potential. And I read a book that my girlfriend's dad lent me called The Greatest Game Ever Played. And it's about, I think, the 1922 US Open. Harry Vardon versus, oh, what's his name? Pierre Lemaitre.
I wasn't around back then. Yeah, I should probably know, to be fair, but no.
But it's sort of about the period when professional golfers were in their infancy as a breed. It was really still an amateur sport.
Weren't professionals almost looked down upon?
Yeah,
by
they
amateurs?
Weren't allowed in the clubhouses.
How mad's that?
So you had this weird world.
The better you got, you weren't allowed to.
Yeah.
That's a weird one, isn't it?
Was it almost classed as, I'm an amateur, I play for leisure, where you have to make it your living, so you're like, look, I'm going to look down at you almost.
It was very much a class thing. Like the pro golfers at the time were sort of more working class people, whereas the amateurs were sort of would do it as a, you know, a pastime, a sport, a leisure sport, really. So anyway, I read this book, and what I took away from it was these people were playing with clubs they'd made themselves. They were playing with none of the rules we have now to make the game easier. So you weren't allowed to repair pitch marks in the green.
No way.
So if your ball rolled onto and lay in a pitch mark, you had to get a little sand wedge out and chip it over.
Oh my goodness! I know stymies existed. Did that get covered in the book?
Yeah, that comes up.
So if somebody's ball is in your way, they could have the option of just leaving the ball there.
Yeah, snookering you.
You don't have to chip over it. That's probably more in match play, but.
But what I took away from it was, after obsessing about all like my swing and what I was doing wrong, I was like, golf has to be simple. The swing has to be a simple thing. If people who've been playing with like rolled up bits of paper and clubs they've made out of sticks, if they can shoot under par in torrential rain, it has to be simple.
And get this. This will blow your mind. They didn't even have Trapmans back then. Hey, I mean, come on. If they didn't,
the balls were smaller.
Yeah, so it was easier to get in the hole.
Yeah, I guess you could say.
No. To be fair, the smaller balls didn't travel as far, and they were much harder to hit. I know they were better through the wind, but they didn't travel as far. I must admit that was one of my takeaways when I spoke to you, our original podcast. I would say you overanalyzed too much of your game, personally. Mm-hmm. And after seeing you play yesterday, you were much more fluid. And you seem like you had become more golf intelligent. So your golf intelligence handicap had come down enormously, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And now, therefore, your actual handicap has also come down. Because what are you off now?
I'm off 19.2.
So you've come down a nice chunk.
And that's off the back tees, which I hadn't factored in for when I put in my cards to get my handicap, is they're not off the yellow tees.
No.
So I basically came up with this plan when driving ranges opened and golf courses opened. And the first thing I did was I went round on my own. So my first round after lockdown, and I made a note on the scorecard of every shot I lost, by which I mean like a genuine unforced error, not just not quite how you imagined it turning out, but a genuine complete mess up shot. And I got back home and I wrote them all out on a spreadsheet. I mean, you're talking about overanalyzing.
Okay, I'll take that statement back.
But I just put down what the shot was in different categories. So there were like putts less than 3 feet, putts less than six, bunker shots, approaches from 100 yards, and also a couple of other categories, which were when I'd failed to take my medicine or when I'd hit a shot like a pro would hit that I'm not capable of. So anyway, I had about 12 different categories.
It's quite simple then, yeah.
And I noted them all down. And what I realised was that I've pretty much got, and I think any golfer who can break 100, at some point you've hit every shot in the book. It's just getting them to all happen in the same round. So I noted them all down, and it was putts from 3 feet and 6 feet and bunker shots. I had six bunker shots to get out of three bunkers. So it's like, well, there's three shots there. I missed three shots on 3 foot. That's another three shots. And I missed probably four putts from 6 foot. So that's what, 10 shots?
Before you know it, shots. 10 shots, yeah.
So that's, you're breaking 90 with that. Yeah. So I then booked in a lesson, an hour lesson, half an hour on bunkers, half an hour on putts. Nothing too extraordinary. Went back the next week, did the same thing again. This time I shot, I've actually got the rounds here. The first round back.
Please do John share. Just got his file of facts out.
But the first round back after lockdown, right, I shot 104. Went away and had that lesson. Next round, 96. Did the same thing. Didn't have a lesson, but just focused on the stuff. Next round, 84.
Wow.
And I got a double bogey on the last. So I was actually bizarrely close to breaking 90 and 80 in the same round.
That'll be outrageous.
And so there's that. So that's about, I think, people listening. If you're not able to play twice a week and practice twice a week, which, let's face it, most golfers aren't, you need to make the practice you do more effective. And I also noticed at the range, other people coming back for their first practice after lockdown. I'll never forget it. This guy in the bay next to me, grabbing ball after ball, whacking driver after driver, swearing, topping it.
Was that Rick Shields that was next to you?
Hitting the bay, angry at himself, going, I can hit this, I can hit this. He must have hit 100 balls in about 15, 20 minutes.
Watching my How to Hit Driver Better video.
It's not working.
And I saw myself in that guy. He was getting out of breath, going crazy. I could see how tense he was. Didn't hit a single ball. So what I started to do was like, okay, whenever you go to the range, after every shot, you're going to step off the mat.
Yeah, I do that.
And you're going to line it up like you line up a shot. And I don't care if you're hitting 20 balls with the 7-iron, even just a warm-up, every shot you're going to step off the mat. Mm-hmm. Every shot you're going to line it up as if you're playing a shot on the course. And whenever if I get like frustrated, the temptation is to grab another ball and whack it and try and hit your way out of that bad sort of swing. But I just tried to make the practice I was doing as helpful as possible. And then the final thing I tried to do was just slow my swing down. Just slow it down and slow it down until it's almost like you're showing someone a swing in slow motion. And it was a revelation that I was hitting the ball as far at what felt like about 70% than this guy next to me in the bay hitting 120%. It was remarkable. So like yesterday we went out, my first four holes were shocking because I locked my keys in my car.
Yeah, well, we're going to come on to this.
We definitely need to come on to this bloody story.
Well, we've Christ got, almighty. So this episode,
what a 24 hours, John has had. Yeah. I'll be honest with you.
This episode, hopefully today, is going to be a good mix, because obviously if you listen to the first one with John before, we've got a lot to catch up on. And I've made a few notes, John, on things that me and Rick want to hear from you. So obviously you've got a handicap. Mm-hmm. We're going to go in that more depth in terms of the process of getting a handicap, how you found it, what you enjoyed, what you didn't enjoy, etc. You've also joined a golf club, so we want to hear more about that. You've had a fit-in for some new clubs, so we want to again hear your experience as an average golfer or a bad golfer as was, in terms of how you found your custom fit-in, what you learnt from it, what was different to what you expected, etc. And also how we've kind of touched on that, but you've certainly improved your golf. So we really want to dive into those topics. But we've also got a few of our regular features that we are going to cover in this episode. We have got our nightmare golf shot. So every week we feature a golf shot that has just been a nightmare. You've got a good one this week. We also started a feature a couple of weeks ago with annoying golfers. So golfers that you play with that do things that annoy you. And it's those almost pet hates. It's almost the pettier, the better. But another little feature we've got this week was, have you ever been late for a tee time or almost late? And how did that happen? So the reason that it's a topic for this week's episode is because yesterday, John Robbins, I was coming to this hotel, was sat in now to pick you up, to then go to the driving range to hit 50 balls, loosen up, catch up, and then go to the golf course and play in a charity day. When I got to the hotel to pick you up, you were stood almost with your head in your hands, with your car keys in the ignition, and your car was locked.
Yeah, so another, like, just to segue in from what we were talking about, another thing I realised is that at my level, you cannot just turn up to a golf club and hit your first shot off the tee. And it's ridiculous to assume that me, with my skill set, can just turn up at like 9 in the morning, stiff, still sort of getting my last bit of coffee down me, and suddenly hit a shot that's going to be on my scorecard. So now, it's a rule, if I'm playing golf, whether it's just with mates or whether it's in a competition, I will hit 30 balls off the range. And you just need to hit one or two that feel right.
Sometimes you don't even need a range. You just need a net, yeah, or something to get your body moving in a golf way, basically.
And when you're in that net or on the range, those first 6 balls that you kind of top or just don't really connect with, that's fine.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
you think of like any cricketer or any footballer, any runner, any sports person. Imagine if like James Anderson bowling for England just rocked up at the ground 5 minutes before, bowled his first over. He'd either pull a muscle or bowl terribly.
Imagine Usain Bolt just getting straight off the coach, get straight onto the track and yeah, running 100 metre in the... I mean, he'd probably still win, to be fair, Usain Bolt, but... No, so you're right.
It's no good me saying to myself, why do I always slice my drives? If that's the first shot I'm hitting, so I've got the rule now, you just turn up 20 minutes early, 30 minutes early, and hit a few shots. Yesterday...
What happened yesterday,
that
John?
Wasn't possible, because as Guy's car turned into the car park of the hotel, I realised that I'd locked my keys in my car, which is A, unlike me, B, very difficult to do, because you can't lock the driver's side door without the keys, but I've been sat in my passenger seat listening to the cricket. Did I call you Craig then?
No.
No.
You called me Guy.
Guy.
Who's
Guy,
Craig?
Craig. I've been texting Craig
about his new shoes.
Oh, yeah.
Guy called, so I took my phone out of the car, closed the passenger seat, locked it as I usually do, and I thought, oh, man. So the next 30 minutes we spent with, may I say, a very kind receptionist and maintenance guy from the Ibis, trying to work out a way of breaking into my car with a coat hanger, because we thought, well, we've seen it in films. It didn't work.
Didn't someone suggest a credit card?
Yeah. There's a credit card and also an untangled paperclip as yeah, well.
I'd have been so impressed if that would have happened. But in reality, you had to get a hammer and smash a window.
Nature's credit card, the hammer. And luckily, my car is, you know, I love my car to bits. It's worth nothing. It's technically now a write-off.
Yeah, because of the smashing of the window.
So I thought, look, we've got to get to the tea time. I can't wait around for the RAC or a locksmith, so I'm just going to have to smash this window. So we did. Managed to get all the stuff out. The maintenance guy taped up the window very kindly after we'd left. You've very kindly brought a cordless vacuum to get some of the glass out of the back seat and some gaffer tape.
Well, I have to retract that statement. I offered to bring the cordless vacuum, but when I told my wife, she went, you've taken our nice cordless vacuum to do what? So currently I have a dustpan and brush and a wired vacuum. So we'll see what Perfect. Happens. But I've got some gaffer tape as well. Were your clubs in the car? I forgot to ask.
No,
this.
They were out already. They were in mine.
But was your car on? No,
the keys were just in the ignition. So I couldn't just leave it.
It was very visible. It was keys in there.
Right.
But then, fortunately, we got to the golf course just in time. Didn't have any practice swings, really, did we? But we got out onto the golf course. So then I put this thing on our Facebook group this morning, asking people for any situations where they have missed a tee time or almost missed a tee time for random reasons. And I've got 3 that I want to read out that might make you feel a little bit better, John, about yesterday. So the first one is from Pete. He said, I'm guessing he lives in Australia, and you'll see why. I was once late because I hit a kangaroo on the way. When I finally got there, I had to deal with an aggressive magpie that seemed to want me dead, and then I lost 7 chrome softs that day. So that was rather an eventful morning for Pete.
Ouch. I hope the kangaroo's okay.
Yeah, another one from Dan Simpson. My missus was giving me a lift to the golf club as a few of the lads were going to have a few drinks afterwards. I woke up nice and early, really excited, and got prepared. Packed the car really early, made my 9-hole sandwiches, filled up my coffee cup and my water bottles, and got to the club about 15 minutes earlier than usual. Went to get my clubs out of her boot, and nothing was there. I'd only gone and packed up the wrong car. So we packed his car rather than his girlfriend's car.
Brilliant.
And then finally, we've got one from James. He says, my father-in-law couldn't find the garage key and it was 6:30 a.m. tea time, so we didn't want to wake up his wife. As a result, he arrived in the tea covered in blood, having punched his own garage window in to climb through the window and get his clubs.
Oh, so I don't think I'd have got my keys out of the car using only my fists.
That is from James's father-in-law. He's obviously a very dedicated golfer to smash his own window to get his clubs out to not wake up his wife.
To be honest, if you could have smashed that window with your fist yesterday, I'd have been bloody impressed, because the first attempt with the hammer shocked you.
Oh, yeah. Those windows are hard.
You had to smash the smallest one because you're driving back down to Bristol again today, aren't you? So
yeah, well, I put on Twitter saying, do I know any car thieves? How do you break in? And unfortunately, I don't know any car thieves.
Well, that's a nice way of vetting your followers, I suppose.
Yeah, but a lot.
Imagine if someone had sent you like a really detailed description, like you'd have been putting a bit of a situation there, going, "Oh, I don't know if I should take this advice."
A lot of people saying use half a tennis ball and you put it over the lock and you sort of hit it and the air pressure forces the lock up. But I think
no
that might
way.
Be a,
again,
a
that
a
feels
myth.
A bit James Bond-esque.
Yeah.
So you're not alone. There are other people that mess up massively. But like I say, you got to tea time today, yesterday, and we actually went and played a golf course that I've never played before. Guy's played a few times, obviously John hasn't, and we had a fourth player. Now, if you've watched the YouTube channel from many, many years ago, you'll recognise this player's name. Mr. Rob Potter joined us, the old mid-handicap tester, who actually now is off single figures, he's off a 9 handicap. So it was me, Guy, John and Rob Potter playing in a charity golf day in memory of Chris Carberry, and it was at Berrington Hall Golf Club, which was an unusual place.
It is. It's literally, no word of a lie, a 2-minute drive from where I grew up, from my mum's house, and it's only a 5-minute drive from my house now. It opened about 10 years ago, and it was promised to be amazing. And as you guys can testify, it's got a huge clubhouse that still isn't complete.
So
it's
weird.
Absolutely massive. It is next door to Clark's Golf Centre, which is an amazing local range that opened at the same time. And the golf centre at the time was a Nevada Bob's. And it opened up with this lovely range and this amazing golf shop. And it was actually potentially one of the best golf shops in the country. So when this opened and the sister golf course was kind of opening, there was no reason to not believe this golf course was also going to be 5-star.
And it had a really cool name.
It was called the Northwest National.
Yeah, which that sounds like it's going to be a pretty
nice location-wise as well, it's just off the East Lancashire Road and the Rainford Bypass. So you could be from Southport, you could be there in 20 minutes, from Liverpool, 15 minutes, Manchester, 35 minutes. It's got a massive catchment area of golfers. So I actually joined it for a year. And it was always kind of being built. It was never built. And the greens at the time, and I've used this analogy a few times, but hopefully it makes sense. A golf green is more than just short grass, isn't it?
It's tailored. It's built.
It's hard to.
Well, it's when you build a green, there are a lot goes
there's
into
sand
it.
And there's all sorts of different
aeration,
stuff, isn't there?
The drainage, everything. Whereas it's a different type of grass.
If you mow your lawn to lowest setting, it's short grass, but it's not like a golf green. It's not even like a fairway, is it? It's just different. And that's what this course was like at the time. It was just like mown grass that was short. The front nine of the course were actually a decent layout. The back nine was just not very good.
It's a bit.
So I went yesterday with you guys and said, look, I'm really looking forward to playing the charity day. It's a great cause. But just be aware, the course is a bit weird. It was actually a better course than I was expecting. It's really improved. However, it was still a strange experience, wasn't it?
Oh, it was so weird. I mean, like Guy said, at this place, I've never been before. I'd heard of it. I'd heard mixed reports about the golf course. Guy exactly didn't big it up with his explanation of it just being short grass. I'm thinking, God, John's come all the way up from Bristol for this. And I mean, Rob Potter would play literally on a mini golf course, so it didn't matter about, he would be fine with anything. Yeah. Rob will be listening, by the way, on his, do you call it his fat
he
walk?
He calls it a fat walk. I think he's lost a stone since lockdown, so wow. Fair play to him.
So well done, Rob, on that. We'll talk about you a little bit more in a minute. But yeah, so the clubhouse was dead weird. It was a really weird scenario, but the course was okay, and the greens were better than just mowed lawns.
Yes.
So it was a best 2 from 4. On the tee, we said, what do you think would win? What would be a goal score? And John said 90 points. We thought that would be pretty good.
Yes.
So what's that? That's about six points a hole.
19 under.
Yeah.
No, 20, sorry, 20 points. Under. Is 90 points. So the best 2 from 4 is 18 under par. So it's averaging 5 points per hole.
Yeah, so you need someone to have a net par, someone to have a net birdie on every hole.
Yes.
Every single hole.
Which I think is pretty good going.
So long story short, we come in after dovetailing as a team tremendously well. And I mean this, like the scorecard, I was doing the scorecard. It was unbelievably even spread by the four of us playing. We all played really well in parts. As John mentioned, didn't get off to the best start, but Guy carried the team for the first few holes. And then John really picked up his game through the midsection of the front nine and through the turn, was absolutely killing it. Rob was super steady as well after, again, a bit of a dodgy start. And I played okay. I got a lot of pars, etc. 17th hole was a nightmare. We only had 1 point. But long story short, we had 91 points. We're walking into the clubhouse thinking, hello, you know, we've got a bit of a chance here.
Yeah.
We've messed up 17th, granted, but we've got a chance. We lost by 19 points.
Yes, possibly even more. I think it was 100 and...
We lost by 21 points, it was.
That's what it was.
Which, with the greatest respect to whoever...
is cheating.
Yeah, made that score. I just don't think on that course, in those conditions, anyone is... What's that? That's
112 points won it.
And also, what was slightly suspicious is there was a closest the pin on every par three, and they were not easy par threes by any stretch. And every single one wasn't just stiff 3 foot; it was stiff 12 inches.
And it was you could only beat it really by getting hole in one.
Yeah,
and absolutely. Someone did. Someone got a hole in one.
Yeah, well, apparently someone got a hole in one as well.
So someone got a hole in one on the third hole, which was the first nearest to the pin, and then every other par three after that, as John mentioned. Honestly, the marker was so close to the hole, we had to move it on several occasions so that one of us could actually get it in the hole. I mean, it was just obscene. There could have been four hole-in-ones yesterday.
Yeah.
Like, easily, on the par threes.
But we actually did cheat as well, and I really enjoyed it.
So, because it was a charity golf day, you could actually put £20 in the pot, and every member of the team got a mulligan. And that was nice.
It was really nice.
That was real, you know, and to be honest, we all used it very nicely to the point where we actually managed to gain more points. So in theory, we got 91 points, but it could have been 87.
I'm considering cheating more often now because I really enjoyed it and I've shot better than I deserve to. So it's quite good.
Well, look what cheating gets you. Cheating gets you 112 points. Yeah. I'm sure they would have picked up some prize. I mean, I don't mind, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I would love to be a fly on the wall in that round of golf. For me... That is cheating. You cannot shoot 112 points in a best two from four without either, and I don't care if I'm saying this publicly, the handicaps are wrong, which is cheating, or you've actually cheated.
Well, I was wondering this morning if it was just ludicrous gimmies, because we didn't play gimmies at all, as you shouldn't do.
Do you know something else as well? I've got to admit something. I wasn't going to say it on the podcast today.
What?
There's two things that we didn't do, and it was completely my fault.
What?
It was preferred lies on the fairway.
Great.
Well, that wasn't a problem for me until about the back nine.
Yeah.
And in the bunkers, you could place it wherever you wanted within 6 inches.
No, never mind.
I actually didn't go in a bunker.
Actually. I didn't go in a single bunker.
You went in two, didn't you?
Yeah.
But like, preferred lies on the fairway. You know that piece of paper that get fallen out of my pocket?
Yeah, that had all the rules on.
That had all the local rules
on. Oh, great. I think what happens with charity days, as good as obviously they are, clearly, a lot of people play that aren't members of golf courses, again, which is fine because I'm not anymore. But it might be John comes and he's like, he used to be off 12, not been a member for 3 years. Oh, put me off 18, lads. And I think that's where the kind of cheating comes from, really.
You're not a member of a golf club, you're a four. We're not going to say, you're not going to turn up yesterday and go, oh yeah, stick me off 15, lads.
Well, you know.
I had this exact conundrum because we've set up a comedians golf society. And there's about 24 people interested. And the first one we played a couple of weeks ago at Verulam in St. Albans. And I was in charge of sorting out the handicaps. But out of the 16 people that played, you probably had four with an actual handicap. You had maybe 10 with a decent enough idea of where about they are. And you had 10 who are just occasional golfers playing twice a year. So even saying, you know, what was your last gross score? They don't know because they were playing match play with a mate or whatever. So it's really tricky because the whole point of a handicap is to make it fair. It's to make it fair when people of different abilities play each other. But that can be hard. And your temptation is to go, oh, well, what do I usually score? That's my handicap. But a lot of people don't understand that's not your handicap.
No.
Your handicap, you might score two or three times a year.
But that's where I'd almost be embarrassed. Let's just say, if the example is, let's say you didn't have a handicap, Guy, and you've not played golf for 2 years, and you rock up yesterday and said, oh, put me off 12. we would have realised pretty soon on, because you were one under through four holes, so it would have gone, actually, you know what, lads? I think 12 is a bit too many shots. Mm. I actually don't think I'm off 12. I'm actually playing really well, and I've not got an official handicap, but I think I'm probably more like playing off six today.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's embarrassingly bad that they are that good of score. I mean, it's just, anyway, if anybody else has, I'd love to hear, this is a topic for the podcast email, send in your email of the most ridiculous charity golf score, like golf this day score you've ever heard of. And I would love it if one of you are actually a member of that group, and if legitimately everything just clicked in place and you hand on heart believe, you swear to the day you die, that you did have 112 points, those cheating sods from yesterday, yeah, email in and describe every single frigging golf shot in that round of golf in detail. You know, it just can't.
The high score, I think, is possible, would be 6 points a hole, realistically. So if two of you get 3 points each, right? Which is hard. That's 108 points altogether.
Well, if you're playing a Stableford comp in your regular club that you play every week and you score over 40 points, you've done well.
Yeah.
And probably a reasonable high for someone whose handicap is under sort of 25, maybe 45 points on the best day of the year.
Yeah.
To have 2.5 members of your group both shooting that.
Yeah.
I just can't see it.
It's just ridiculous.
Off the white tees as well.
Exactly. Email into podcasts@rickshields.com with your stories about cheating golf day scoundrels.
And also, you can...
you can have that as the subject.
You can follow the new new Instagram account we've got, which is The Rick Shields Golf Show. And there's a little button on there that just says email. You can click that and you're straight through to the email address as well.
Do you know we couldn't get verified on that account?
Yeah, we tried and failed.
Did you?
Because apparently one person, one individual, can't be verified on two different accounts.
Oh, that's
so interesting. My personal can't be verified and this one be verified.
So very kindly, they said they're going to give it to me instead. So
we're actually going to call the podcast now the Guy Charnock Golf Show.
Yeah,
just so we get a blue tick. And we could do that and then just change the name back.
That's true.
We've got some questions actually talking about the podcast. We asked it yesterday on the story. this is a good one. Ross McGill. How do you feel about Guy's man crush for you that's disappeared? So I don't know if you know this.
Oh yeah.
Guy's a super fan.
Good.
Of your podcast, of your radio show, of pretty much everything you do. And this is now the second encounter. And you often get told not to meet your heroes.
Yeah.
Has your opinion changed much of Guy of Mr. John Robbins?
Has my opinion of John changed?
Yeah.
The only thing that has changed is I don't know how much longer you can go under the name of Bad Golf.
Yeah, because you hit some unbelievable golf shots yesterday. And you had a string of pars for six holes at the back nine. You were one over par.
I don't think that's true, Rick. I think I was. I remember seeing that
they were the numbers. I was putting down on the scorecard. Anyway,
another cheats.
Another thing as well, actually, that has changed. When I thought of John Robbins, I thought of like efficiency and being on time. And after yesterday's incident and this morning's incident of going to the wrong hotel,
this morning was a shambles.
Not
as
just
well.
Going to the wrong hotel. Lee checking out of the hotel we were meeting in, driving to another hotel 30 minutes away, and then driving back. It's been a... I don't know what's happening to me. I'm losing my marbles.
Yeah, you were all over the show today.
I mean, you say about the not being bad golf anymore, a bad golfer, which I would like to be true, but those first four or five holes yesterday, I was worse than bad. It was embarrassing. I started... On the third hole, I actually started to go red from embarrassment. And I think that's another difference that I've made in my game, is I've stopped letting my mood affect the score.
Yeah.
So I was actually saying to myself in my head, John, calm down. You know how to hit a golf ball. It'll come. And it did. Whereas if we'd been playing that 6 months ago and I'd had that bad a start, I think the whole day would have been a complete collapse, yeah, and it would have been incredibly awkward. Something Laura Davis said, she said, you can only hit one bad shot at a time. And true. I was like, that's so true.
Yeah, that is actually. because a lot of the time you compound errors by putting more bad shots onto other bad shots.
Well, you think my game has gone, whereas actually it hasn't. You've just hit a bad shot. The ball doesn't know what shot you've hit to get it there.
That's true.
And some of the best shots I've ever hit have been, I mean, every golfer will know this. You shank one out of bounds and hit a provisional, and the provisional just flies into space and is perfect.
There's actually a ball brand come out that have called themselves Provisional.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Johnny's asked, who really hits it further, Guy or Rick? Tell us the real truth, John.
Well, should we talk about when I convinced Guy to use his driver?
Yeah, let's talk about that now.
So Guy kept hitting, what was it, a three-wood and a
two
hybrid?
Two iron and three-wood, yeah, just flicking it around.
I don't know why, because if you'd listened to last week's podcast when we described the way that Guy played the week before...
Rick, let John speak.
And I said to Guy...
Guy hit his driver, unbelievable. Yesterday, he hit it once.
Well, I said to him, why do you not hit a driver on this hole? And he was like, oh, I can't hit a driver. And I said, well, you can't with that attitude. Because as soon as you start to pick up a club and go, I can't hit that club... What a terrible mindset to be approaching a shot. Well, I can't hit this club, so this is going to go wrong. And, yeah, it goes wrong. So I said, well, just hit it. So he did, and you must have hit that 330 yards straight.
It was more the difference that was past Rick yet again.
It was about 25 yards past Rick. But in fairness, Rick had just run to get his glove and come back. But it was certainly one of your shots of the day.
Yeah, it was.
It was your best drive.
Yeah.
It was your only driver. No, he was longer, definitely. It was, and I must admit, that was a pretty fair test on that hole. Bar what John mentioned, that's my only little tiny excuse that I dropped my glove on the previous hole. And as I teed up on the hole, ready to hit my tee shot, I'd realised I forgot my glove, so I ran all the way back. I mean, it must have been a 150-meter sprint or something. And I came back onto the tee, and Guy was stood there like a Cheshire cat, grinning, because I knew he'd hit a good tee shot, because I heard the roars and the oohs and the ahs coming from Rob and John on the tee. So I'm thinking, bloody hell, he's hit a good driver shot here. I come back on the tee, and I'll be honest, I hit one well. I hit it nicely. Walking down there, I'm smack bang in the middle of the fairway, couldn't have hit it much better. And you're right, Guy was longer. I think 25 is a bit of a stretch. I think 25 yards is a bit of a stretch.
Was actually 25, but anyway.
But it was longer, definitely, and he was straight in the middle of the fairway. So yeah, absolutely. With driver, you are longer.
Rick's longer with irons. I'll caveat that.
But I've completely stopped caring about distance. Really, I mean,
still quite a big thing, to be honest.
But apart from knowing the distance,
yeah, no, it is a bit of an ego thing.
But it is, and this is something we joke about. We don't know what strokes gained a lot because I don't massively understand it. But that hole, though, so I did hit probably as good a drive as I can hit. I then hit a horrendous 54-degree wedge that I actually was disgusted with, but I put it to 15 foot because it was a wedge. If I'd have been 8-iron and hit the same standard of shot, I'd probably miss the green. So it kind of shows that if you can hit it far, you can then hit bad shots but still have birdie chances.
Yeah. I pretty much did that all day yesterday. Like, I hit driver really nicely today, to be honest. I was hitting it really well off the tee. And I hit my wedges and my irons pretty poorly for me. But there wasn't many times I missed the green. Like, the first hole, like a horrendous wedge, and it still hit the green. The second hole, I nearly drove the green, hit a terrible little chip, to be honest, but still hit it fairly close.
My understanding of strokes gained from someone who's not very good at golf is that it's one of those areas where they're taking statistics from pros and trying to apply it to amateurs and average golfers. And you'll drive yourself mad trying to compare yourself to pros. It works for pros, of course it does, because if they hit 280-yard, 290-yard drive, chances are it's going straight. If you've got someone who's playing off 24 who maybe hits one in three drives onto a fairway, they'd be much better hitting a hybrid or even, you know, like a 5-iron. If it goes straight, keeping the ball in play is, I would say, more important for someone of my level than... you know, making sure you're hitting a 52 rather than a 9-iron into the green.
Right.
Well, it goes back to our original video that we did, me hitting 7-iron, just plodding it down there because I knew it was going to be somewhere straight. I know if I hit 7-iron all the way around, I reckon I could put a pretty decent... I'm never going to shoot over 85,
yeah.
Let's say, for example.
You're only getting enough trouble to do so.
I just can't. Like, I can't literally, unless I can't reach over a par 3 or something... Technically, I shouldn't be able to shoot that high of a score.
Well, I would say the one memory I have of that round when I first broke 90, that round of 84, which is, it's on a par 69, so it's 15 over. I didn't hit amazing shots, but I never felt I was hitting a shot I couldn't hit, and I never felt out of control of the hole. And I think that's a big thing that, say you're a classic thing I used to do, would I'd hit it right into some sort of semi-rough, and the green's 190 yards away, and I think, well, you can make up for that, because you get your hybrid, you can hit your hybrid 190 yards, and I'd end up topping it further into the rough. That shot is not a shot I'm capable of hitting out of rough. It's like, even off the fairway, it's probably a 1 in 5 shot. So just only playing shots I have memories of hitting well, which is usually, you know, 6-iron, 9-iron, whatever, laying up every so often, made an enormous difference, not just to the score, but to my mental state on the round, because I was never trying to get out of trouble. And even if you top a 7-iron 100 yards down the middle of the fairway, that's fine.
Yeah. You put it in play. We're going to answer more questions. I just want to give one shout out to Rob Potter for his phenomenal eagle on 16.
It was literally a tapping eagle.
That was really good.
We thought
he'd
gone in.
Honestly, driver, slight dog leg up the hill, right to left, to hit a great tee shot with a weird old R7 TaylorMade driver that he's got in the bag at the moment.
Yeah, he's getting his Cobra F9 fixed. Apparently something cosmetically was wrong with it. Cobra said they'll fix it, so we've got an R7 in the back.
So yeah, great. And then he was 200 odd yards out, hit hybrid, absolutely. He was screaming for the top of his voices for the ball to get up on the green. It landed front edge, rolled up to literally 2 foot. You can watch the video of his eagle put on my Twitter feed. Tapped it in for eagle, did a slightly cringy eagle celebration, but phenomenal. That was his class eagle. I thought I'd mention that while Rob's probably halfway through his fat walk at the moment.
Do you want to hear this week's nightmare golf hole? And it's not a conventional one, but it resonates to me because it would be my nightmare.
Okay.
Okay, so it's from Sean Dooley. And he started the email with, "Hello, Guy and Rick." And just so you know, John, and listeners know, if you start your email with, "Hello, Guy and Rick," there's a good chance you're going to get your email read out.
Because Guy manages the email.
Exactly. So he says, "Massive fan here from Florida, Bubba Watson territory." And also, he happens to be a lefty. So he's like you, John. He's a fellow lefty. He follows the podcast on all the platforms, and he recently bought some M2 irons based off Rick's review back in 2017. This story is of a bittersweet hole-in-one. I was playing by myself around 6 p.m. in Virginia while on vacation with my wife and daughter. I was on the 11th hole, which is 150 yards out to the pin, which is a nice smooth 8-iron for me. I couldn't really see the pin as the sun was starting to set and the pin was blinding to look at. I had a nice smooth swing and hit the ball with great contact. I lost the flight of the ball in the sun, but thought it would be well past the green, as I believe I struck it too well, which happens to be one of the downside effects that Rick said of the M2 irons. Sometimes you hit them and they almost go too far. I got up to the green and was looking all around the surrounding areas, the bunkers, the rough, couldn't find the ball. I thought to myself that surely there was no way it went in. My heart skipped a beat as I walked up to the hole to see my beautiful Pro V1 in the hole. I was absolutely beside myself and immediately looked around to see if there were any witnesses. To my luck, there were none. I normally play with 3 or 4 friends every week back home in Florida. And of course, this one time I hit a hole in one was the one few times I've ever played on my own. I, of course, told all mates about the story and they tend to joke about me when we're on every par 3, saying, "Oh, come on, you normally get hole in ones on par 3s. Let's see how it's done," etc. It is amazing that I actually hit a hole in one. And I know that I did it, but having to say it when you have to do it when you're on your own is a really bittersweet accomplishment. Hope this email finds you both well and recommend not to go on any par 3s by yourself, because you never know, you might get a bittersweet hole-in-one.
We got an email to our radio show about a bittersweet hole-in-one.
And was it on their own again?
No. Did I mention this last time I was on the show?
I don't believe so.
So there's a guy playing. He's playing with mates. And as you do on the par 4 or 5 before, looking in the rough for his ball, he found a few balls, a few like decent new ones. So he put them in his bag. Next hole, it's a par 3. So he tees up one of the new balls, thinking, well, it's in better nick than the one I've been playing with. Gets a hole in one. They go crazy. Goes down to the pin, picks the ball out, sort of holds the ball up, realizes it's one of those illegal go straight balls.
No way.
His mates don't know this. So it's a secret he's had to this day, that his legendary hole-in-one was actually played with an illegal ball he'd found on the previous hole.
That is so good. I mean, my question is, why did someone lose it on the hole previous? if it's a straight ball, why did it not go straight? But that's crazy because we reviewed that.
Yeah,
ball.
I saw that video.
I mean, it sold out in like minutes after we reviewed it because it's had like 3 million views or something stupid now. But the fact he had a hole in one with one.
That's great. But what I like with that, so with this story as well, is that like I've done that before. I've been on the course on my own. I've not played on my own for ages, but I used to play as a junior quite regularly on my own. Actually quite enjoyed it. But you'd hit a good iron shot on a par three and it would almost be a case of don't go in, don't go in. Because there's something about being with people and celebrating a hole in one. And although people would, I'm sure, would believe you, but that would be horrible.
Yeah. You'd have to... I've seen it a few times on social media now where they've got the phone and literally filmed from the tee all the way to the hole.
Yeah,
and, it's like the same.
But like, it's been weird actually recently. When you and me played last week, yeah. I was super close on 7.
Yeah,
I just did a video that's coming out this week actually on 7 again. I was almost arguably even closer to a hole in one, but because we didn't have the main camera, we were just shooting on phone. We didn't have the proper zoom in and everything. For me, if I get one now, I have to have it literally perfect. I want it on video. I want the drone up. I want shot tracer there. I want it to be zoomed in. I want it to be the first shot, obviously, because it has to be a legit hole in one. And there's been a few occasions last few weeks, months where I've been getting close. I'm sure it'll fizzle out. But I feel like if I got one without it being proper videoed now, I'd be gutted because I've only had one.
Really?
And for me, luckily, even though it wasn't videoed, because it was only 3 years ago, it wasn't on video, there was about 50 people around the hole, because I did it in open qualifying, and it was like, it was phenomenal. So the story Rob said yesterday on one of the holes, he was there watching it, and he was at the front of the hole, front of the tee box at West Lancs, and I got it in, threw my club up in the air, proper Hollywood style. He tried to run through these brambles, and all I remember from this hole in one is seeing Rob's little head stuck in these brambles because he tried to run to the tee to celebrate. but yeah, no, it's having one on your own must be like a weird thing to experience.
Sure. I'd rather have one on my own than not have one.
So moving nicely on to our next topic, because you've just recently joined a golf club. Mm. And someone's asked, actually, what's it been like to join a golf club? So fill us in with what it's been like, because someone new coming into golf, it's sometimes a bit of a daunting experience, right?
Yeah, and the course I've joined is one I knew really well because it's where I've had lessons. And you know, I use the practice facilities there. So I think you get a vibe off a golf course quite quickly. Mm. Like I've been to a few where I've just thought, this isn't for me. And I think golf clubs are going through a transition at the minute where they're realizing that they have to appeal to younger people. They have to appeal to women. So the club I've joined is like a very sort of family orientated. The members are very friendly. It's great having the opportunity to play as often as I want, not just because I've only joined on a flexible membership. So it's one of those ones where, which are getting more common now, where you pay, I think I paid like 400 quid for 400 credits and I can use them throughout the year. And it's more to play on a Saturday morning. Than
that's
to
the
play
future. 100%.
Yeah, totally.
I've seen that before actually.
And there's no like stigma that it's not like I'm not a proper member. I'm treated just the same as anyone else. Everyone's really friendly with sort of helping you out. They've got WhatsApp groups and that sort of thing.
So you almost have like an allocation of time on the golf course. And some tee times are more valuable, let's say. It might cost you 3 points to play on a weekend where it might take a 1 point on a Tuesday morning, for example. Yeah. Is that how it works?
Yeah, and they said to me that a couple of the guys on the committees, they were like, look, why have you joined? Is it just to get cheaper golf? Is it to get more lessons? Is it to get involved with the society? Is it to play in competitions? Is it? And I said, look, I just want to play as often as I can, get a handicap and get better.
Do you want to play in competitions?
I have played in some competitions.
Have you found it?
The only thing that's tricky, and I can totally understand their reasons for doing this, there are a lot of rules about how many competitions you have to play in before you can compete or win one. How many was certain sort of criteria for getting your handicap. And the reason is because a few idiots spoil it by inflating their handicap to try.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Get on the honors board, and I can totally understand that, but it does make you feel, as a new member, a lot of what you're being told is what you can't do as opposed to what you can do. But it's just a shame that people, like at that charity competition, you know, someone hands in three cards and they get a 20 handicap, and then they play in their first competition, they get 47 Stapleford and get their name on the board.
I understand why, because they want to win, but why would you want to win knowing that you've... Because it's not even like... Say it was a gross tournament and you actually cheated to shoot a lower gross than somebody else. I kind of... Not that I condone it, but I get it because you want to win. But why do you want to win knowing that you had a false handicap?
Basically, it's just the maths.
It would make me feel like difference. Embarrassed. It's like...
I think it's just like a certain type of personality that can compartmentalise that sort of thing and go, I won. There's my name. Like, apparently Donald Trump, whenever he opens a golf course, he plays on the first day... And he calls it the opening tournament, and he wins. So he claims to have won like 50 golf competitions.
Yeah. You know what? I might get a bit of flack for saying this, but I honestly think if you grew up playing golf, typically you are more honest to sport. If you think about it, if you play football at a decent level and you kick the ball out for, and it would be thrown to the team, as a player, you still claim it was the opposition play. Do you know what I mean? Or you get fouled and you play like you've been really hurt or whatever. And I think those people that come into golf, as we want as many people to play golf as possible, we welcome them with open arms. I think there's a little bit of that sometimes. I'm not saying to that level, but from other sports, it's almost that kind of not quite as
do
honest.
Anything to
a little
win.
Bit, yeah, I'll be honest. Because some of my friends have come from a football background to golf, and that's amazing. I'm so happy that they play golf. But there's still a little bit of that, like, I wouldn't say cheating, but massively bend the rules to your advantage, yeah. Which I don't think you get from people that have played golf for but, long.
Well, look at even, sorry, just quick, just like recently, was it Rory McIlroy? He dropped it in the rough or something. And he got a better lie than he should have done, and he actually chose to re-drop it to get a more similar lie than a worse lie. And obviously, he was celebrated for that, rightly so, because that's in honour of the game. And I think you don't get that in many other sports. And a lot of these tour athletes have been around for so many years playing from such a young age. I mean, there's one exception on tour that seems to get the flak for bending a lot of the rules, but yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? I can never quite understand it. The only time you should get a player who shoots a exceptional score is like an up-and-coming junior who has worked his or her socks off for 6 months or 6 weeks, whatever, in the school holidays. Everything's clicked, and you do see ridiculous scores from good junior golfers.
And I think the whole point of me getting a handicap and really putting time and thought into it is because I want to know how good I am, and I want to know if I'm getting better or if I'm getting worse. So the idea of having a handicap that didn't reflect where I'm at,
yes,
it's totally counter. It's a waste of time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm off 19 now. If I shot my absolute best ever round, I might finish 2 or 3 under that, maybe 4 under that. So the max I might make like 40 points. And I'd be well chuffed with that. I'm not thinking, oh, well, if they'd given me 24, then that would be 50 points. You know, I don't really see the point in it. But golf is one of those things where I think your attitude to it as a sport determines how likely you are to sort of bend those 100%. Rules.
And I wonder if it'll change much with the World Handicap System. Actually, that might change things a little bit as well, because it's more of an average of your scores potentially. Mm. And it seems like a lot of the handicaps are maybe potentially netting down as opposed to kind of working up. So you've enjoyed it so far. You've enjoyed
yeah,
being. And what's the goal for? Let's not say this year, because obviously this year has been a bit of a weird one. But let's say we meet up in November 2021. The world hopefully has become a more normal place again. What would you love to say your handicap is?
In total honesty, because I have to be true to the goal I set myself, just to play off 18, and that's still the goal.
Yeah, but come on, John. That's next week's goal. That's not...
I know, and hopefully I'll achieve it, but what I don't want... I want to play golf for pleasure. It gives me a huge amount of pleasure. I get excited when... Like yesterday, I woke up in the morning. I had to drive 3.5 hours. I couldn't care less. I was so excited about playing. And I want to keep that. I don't want to be in a position where if I have one blob on an account, the whole day's ruined, and I don't want to be back in that place where I'm beating myself up for bad shots, because I'm always going to be inconsistent, because I didn't play golf as a kid, and I don't have like a natural swing. It's definitely something I've had to work on. So if I could play bogey golf for the rest of my life, I'd be so happy with that. I always want a par to be a real achievement. I never want to be disappointed about getting a par. So I'd love to have that as a goal and come back in a year's time and say I'm off 15. I just always want it to be like something that gives to me, and something that relaxes me, something that gives me some great social occasions. I never want it to be me going, oh God, I should be off 12. I should be off 12, but I'm not, Rick. What am I doing wrong?
Yeah. I'm going to ask, we're going to do something again this time, November next year, and I'll ask the same question, because I think where you are now in your mind, that makes sense. I'd be interested to see if that mindset changes.
Quick question for you, John. I know it's hard to answer, but you may have some stats to hand. Roughly, when you play, how many pars you normally get, roughly?
On a good day, I'll maybe get 5.
So you get, if you're getting 5 pars and the remainder of bogey golf, you're shooting 13 over, obviously, but you know you're going to have some bad holes that might be doubles or whatever.
Yeah.
So once those bad holes start to become less bad, which they will with improvement and time, those 5 pars... As long as you get your 13 bogeys, you've shot 13 over. So what I'm trying to get to is, I think what we don't really often expect with golf, but it's what happens, is your great shots might not improve much in the next year. They don't need to improve much, but it's making your bad shots better.
Well, I've already, like if I look back at my scorecards of the last month and a half, the amount of 8s and 9s that are gone, that's massive.
Yeah.
I've broken 90 with 2 triple bogeys.
Yeah.
See, which isn't easy.
Yeah, you've got the capabilities, but you will have, there'll be a round not in the distant future where things will really click for you. You'll suddenly put a 14 over in, rightly so, because you've got the ability to shoot that. As probably a lot of 18, 19 handicappers have, but I think you're on the correct trend. Your game is trending in the sense that you are improving every time you go out and play and practice, I would say.
The whole point of that like spreadsheet I made with where I'm losing shots, you have to know what part of your game is weak. Mm-hmm. Because for me, at the minute, it's 50 yards and in. So the point of me going to a driving range and hitting 7 irons and drivers, there's not really much point. If every time I go, I force myself to go on the putting green, force myself to do some chipping, because I know that's where I'm losing probably 10 shots around.
Follow-up question. And again, I like hearing it from your perspective, because you're very good at being able to... summarize and explain it, and obviously you're coming in from this kind of bad golfer angle. You recently went for a fitting, right?
Yeah.
How was that?
It was really great fun. It felt like a real treat, a real day out. So it was a Cobra fitting at Silvermere,
which we will caveat, and only because I'm sure we'll get, you are looked after by Cobra.
yeah, they sort out our sort of clubs and our clothing for the channel, which is incredibly kind of them.
So like I say, that I'm sure they would be anyway, but they were very nice to you. But the fitting experience itself, how did you find it?
It's very, when your swing is inconsistent by nature, if you're sort of playing off maybe 18 or 20 or above, you worry that when you're getting all this sort of these contraptions out and the little
like launch monitors
and the little thing you hit off to show where you impact,
the lie board,
you're like, well, what swing are they actually recording? Because it could be any of the 6 or 7 different swings I have. But I think most of my stuff was like pretty regular. The one thing that I've got is graphite shafts, which is not like I wasn't expecting to get. It's not something I asked for, but I just tried out graphite versus the regular steel shafts, and it just felt like I could swing slower, and it felt a bit more like I knew where the club head was.
Yeah.
And since I've slowed the swing down, I've really enjoyed them. Now, next year, if my swing's a bit faster, maybe I'll change back to steel. But I didn't feel any like, because I'm not particularly immersed in golf, I didn't feel like, oh, am I getting a senior's flex? Or I didn't really care. It just felt nice.
You'll see that more, though, now, over the last 3 or 4 years, and certainly ongoing, that you'll get more golfers in graphite in the irons, because the quality of the graphite now is so good that you used to lose a lot of... With a graphite shaft in your irons, it was lighter, which was a benefit, because it helped get people to get more clubhead speed. But they're often a lot less stable, and therefore potentially less consistent to some regard. Whereas now the quality of graphite you can get is so good.
Quite a while ago, graphite was unbelievably popular. Like it was like the trendy thing to have.
It's very big in Germany and in Europe. Yeah, Germany. I went again in my old job, which I talk about a lot, but in my old job, I went to a massive German golf store called Golf House. And they had the iron walls, and it was literally like 50% graphite, 50% steel for irons. It's really, really big over there.
Is graphite still more expensive than steel?
Yeah, you're normally looking at about £20-30 a club more. So for 8 irons, it's, what, 200 quid more, roughly?
Be quite a cool video to do, potentially.
There's definitely some benefits to graphite.
One thing I've done, which I actually texted Guy about, is, so my fade, I sort of, my natural shot is a fade to a slice off the drive and off the irons. And I was starting to slice it a lot off the tee. So I spoke to my coach and he said, "Your shaft's too long. Just put a 3-wood shaft on. Driver shafts are getting far too long. I'm fitting with a 3-wood length shaft on the driver." So I texted Guy, and like every golfer at my level, the first thing I thought was, what bit of kit can I get to solve this problem? Whereas actually,
how can I buy my way out of this?
What I needed to, what I did, was I looked at your recent video, 5 tips to stop a slice, went to the range with that video, my headphones in, every single element of that video worked.
Great.
And worked immediately. Now, it taken me a while to do it naturally without thinking about it, but when I think about it, that works. However, I've got a shorter shaft coming on the way. But even the shorter shaft, even an inch shorter than the standard shaft length, is still longer than drivers were 20 years ago.
Massively, yeah.
So I think it'll be 44.5 inches as opposed to 45.5 inches. Does that sound right?
Yeah, it will do. 45.5 inches is too long. And also, you'll notice if you do have a slice, the longer shaft you have, the more that'll promote a heel strike as well.
Actually, it's going to be 44.5, not 45.5. 45,
yeah, so it's an inch shorter.
The standard one is 55. I'm getting 44.5. And most tall players, it's 43.5.
It's still amazing to me how many people slice the golf ball, if I'm dead honest. Like, it's me. I honestly think I could fix any slice in the world. And that it proves that video that we did, I think that's had 1.4 million views or something stupid in not that long a time. I've just recently put a hook video on. Like, the percentage of views compared to the slice one is, like, tiny. Like, it must be, like, 20% to 80%. 80% of golf bad shots are slices, which is crazy.
I think as well, though, obviously, massively, it does come down to technique, obviously. And like you said, you watching that video of Rick, helped you to sort of essentially cure yours. But part of it with drive does come to drivers being too long. The longer the shaft is in your golf club, the more it's going to promote a heel strike. And with a driver, a heel strike with modern drives is a massive fade.
I think it's going to be an interesting time in the next 10 years with golf clubs, golf club manufacturing, because lofts are getting harder.
Stronger with irons.
Yeah, driver shafts are getting longer, even though pros don't even play with drivers that long. But some brands have recently started to dial their lofts back a bit, haven't they?
Yeah.
Because you can't keep going like this forever.
It's been the devil, if you like, of launch monitors, basically. So again, when I used to fit golfers, the big thing that people want, no matter what they say, ultimately people want more distance, 9 times out of 10. So if they've got a 5-year-old driver, technology in driver heads, regardless of what brands say, hasn't changed that much in the last 5 years. So if player A comes with a 44-inch driver and I give him a 45.5-inch driver, he might be a lot more inconsistent with it. But if he gets 3 shots out of his 50 that go an extra 20 yards, that's what they remember. And ultimately, that's what they want to buy. And it sounds bad, but it's true.
Well, I must admit, sells. It's taken me 7 years, hundreds and hundreds of product testing, only to recently realise that I don't need a driver to for distance. Like, it's taken me that long. Yeah. So anybody else who's just literally going for a fitting, they just want distance, and I get it. It's now become more about, for me, certainly with a driver, is a driver that I feel comfortable with, a stable driver, one that, okay, I can get distance out of, but distance isn't the number one priority for it. I wanted to ask that question. So I think a lot of people get worried about fittings, and I get it, because if I was to throw myself in a new world, I mean, it sounds, we used to talk about this a lot on the podcast when we went for that dart shop that time.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's only down the road from here, actually. But if I went for a darts fitting, I'd be a nervous wreck. I'd feel like I'd miss the board.
Well, he was asking us questions, didn't he? Because there's the, John will know, there's the barrel, isn't there? What's the next bit called? There's, you've got the flight and that middle bit. What's the middle bit even called?
Shaft or stem,
whatever.
Is it actually shaft, yeah.
And like the guy in the shop.
Imagine somebody who's dead into golf, dead into
stem.
Darts, and we said, so what's the stem on this?
Yeah.
What's the stem on this stick?
What flexes your stem? But like, he asks us these questions, what weight do you, and he's like, I have no idea. And then you can have different tips of the actual bit that, what's the even bit that goes in the board called, just the pointy bit.
Spiky bit.
What even called? I don't know. Even that, you can get different lengths off, can't you, I think? And also, and it's like...
And thicknesses. Yeah, like, it's literally like walking into a golf shop and having no idea, and they're going, so what weight do you want in your three-wood? Well, what loft do you want in your three-wood?
But they're not... The thing I would say to people is, they're not expecting you to come with that knowledge. They're expecting you to come with...
I wouldn't say that's all fitters.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, my experience was... that they just wanted me to hit shots, a bit like when you go for a lesson and the instructor will go, just hit me 5 or 6 7-irons, warm up, and they'll start to sort of get a picture of your swing. And I would say that I'm never one to say people should throw money at a problem, but if you are going to spend money on golf, it should be on lessons and then getting fitted. If you're going to spend a grand or more on a set of clubs, you might as well spend the extra, I don't know how much it is, extra 100 quid, 150 quid to get fit, or you might get free fitting with...
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely. Most places now, fittings... I don't mind... I'm saying I don't mind paying for fitting. I actually think paying for fitting, you get a better service, personally, because, again, you're not... I think sometimes when it's a free fitting, there's no incentive for the fitter. And I think sometimes then you get led down a path that's about getting you into a set that's worth more, so that fitter either gets a cutback, or if they're selling it. I think if you pay for a fitter, even if that fitter said, you know what, actually your clubs are better for you than the ones I can give you, he's already made his money. I personally think paying for a fitting is never a bad idea.
You know what's mad, I was just thinking then about golf clubs, right? Imagine being a completely new golfer, right? And I say, this is a set of golf clubs in a bag, and they look at them and go, this one's your driver, okay? It's got a number 10 on it and a degree sign, okay, right? Okay, that's driver. This is a 3-wood, got number 3 on it, okay? This is your 5-wood, right, it's got a 5 on it. This is your 4-hybrid, right, okay? This is a 5-iron. Then you get to say, this is a PW, an SW, a putter. Like,
this is
there's no logic to any of it, is there?
This is a 60-degree club.
Now you go, yeah, exactly, now you go back to degrees again. Like, why is your longest iron, why is there no 1-iron or 2? Well, there was years ago, but it is a minefield, isn't it? The driver's not called a 1-wood anymore. Why are they called woods, the metal now? Like, it is actually just, there's quite a lot in it.
Well, imagine again, if you went to that dart shop and he said, okay, these are the feathers. And you're like, yeah, but they're not made out of feathers. I know, sorry, but they used to be made out of feathers. Yeah. All right, okay. So why are they still called feathers? Oh, it's a long story. But anyway, these are your feathers. These are the weighted feathers. These are the lighter feathers. This is your one feather. Like,
Do we need a hybrid? No, you need a rescue. Yeah. Well, what about utility wood?
Often I think it's quite useful to get an idea of whether you need a fitting from a lesson. Because if someone's coaching you, they have no interest in saying you need to be spending loads of money on new clubs. They're more likely to go, you can fix it by changing this part of your stance or your follow through or whatever. That's the problem. But it is so difficult not to be tempted to go, yeah, I've got a bit of a hook on my iron, so I need a new set of clubs. You don't need a new set of clubs.
When I was coaching full time, and I would massively steer people away from getting fit clubs because I wanted the money for coaching. I did, honestly, that's truthful. Like if a golfer coming to me and said, I've got a grand to spend on everything, I'd be like, okay, so you need maybe £950 with me and £50 on some balls or something. Like, but again, if you've got, it is a bit of a minefield because you have got so many different compartments. Like, say, a lesson that's only a lesson, that's all you get. A lesson who also sells clubs, a club fitter. You've got a shop with a free fitting. It's hard, and sometimes the fitter doesn't quite understand the golfer's intelligence, what we were talking about before about how you've improved your golf intelligence in lockdown. Sometimes really good golfers don't have that good a golf intelligence.
Well, like, this is the thing that kind of drives me nuts, and I probably mentioned it the last time I was on, but 100% of the time you're getting taught how to swing a golf club, but you're not getting taught how to play golf. I'm convinced that I, just with my understanding of researching and reading and watching a lot of videos about course management and the mentality of golf, I'm sure if I caddied for someone much better than me, I could get them to go around in a few less shots. Because you can sit on a stand, hopefully if you're doing it right, on a range mat for 100 years, but that doesn't tell you how to approach a round of golf. And it also doesn't tell you how to be in charge of your own attitude. And I think so many people expect far too much of themselves on a golf course. And when it doesn't happen, that then leads to the score getting higher and higher and higher.
I think you did talk about that last time. And I think the challenge is, again, it's from a business sense, from a golf coach, that doesn't work for him. Because done a driving range map with 10 students walking into you, teaching for an hour each and off they go, they can make money. When as soon as you've got to get out on the golf course, like, we've got to go out on the golf course for 2 hours minimum. Mm. That costs you a lot of money. It costs me a lot of time. There's weather implications. And actually, in that 2 hours, yes, you hit shots, but not that many shots. Like, a lot of it is walking to the shots.
But I can hit lots of shots repeatedly on my own.
Yeah.
But the experience of playing off grass, the experience of knowing what I can and can't do at my level. So, you know, if my drive's gone short, like I said, 200 yards to the pin, no way is that a shot I can take on. Hitting a 3-wood, you might go and get fitted for clubs. You might have a 3-wood. Start trying to hit that off the fairway. That's one of the most difficult shots in golf. That's not a shot I would ever attempt. But what, no one's told you not to, because you've been able to hit it a few times in the range. So it's about sort of like percentage golf and about really sort of each hole having its own little narrative that you shape, and it's not just trying to hit 4 or 5 perfect shots and going crazy at yourself when they go wrong.
It is quite strange when you think about it that the vast majority of golf lessons and golf fittings are undertaken in an environment that is completely different to a golf course.
It's the only sport in the world you don't practice on the surface you play on.
It's mad, isn't it?
I say we because it was we in the end. I had a fitting with a brand that's bringing out some new drivers soon, and guy jumped on for a bit of a fitting as well, a bit of a hit. That was such a better experience on a hole.
Yeah, it was.
But it's not possible. Like, we are very privileged that we did it where we did it.
Not the average consumer, is it?
It's just impossible. Not... Like, that was the first time. We had two launch monitors there, but I was genuinely hitting golf shots and go, I actually don't care what the launch monitors are saying on that golf shot. That's a perfect shot. down that hole. I don't hit it any better than that. It's the right flight. I know it's not going to go left. I don't care if the launch monitor tells me that's 5 yards further than my own driver or 5 yards. It doesn't matter. That shot is perfect, in my opinion.
But what you could do is say to your coach or your local pro or whatever, especially in summer, say, look, what time's the last tee? It's usually around 5:30, 6 o'clock. Can we just jump on the first hole at 10 past 6 and I want to hit a few drives, I want to hit a few shots off the fairway, I want to chip, I want to putt, all just an hour's lesson. You don't have to worry about sort of people behind you. I think that's as useful as a couple of hours on a range, Matt.
The perfect scenario, if I was to build a golf school, I would literally build a three-hole golf course, which was a loop, a par four, a par three, and a par five, with different teeing stations. And in an hour, we could play three holes, three different locations, and you would see vast improvement very quickly, because then it's still manageable. We jump in a buggy, we play three holes, a loop, let's say different conditions, whatever it may be. And for the pro, it still is a business sense. It still makes sense. You don't have to charge $1 million to make this work. I mean, you have to pay $1 million to build a facility like that. But then also you can have that repeat 10. And if it was indoor, even better, because then you could do it all the time through the night and whatever. But yeah, you're right. I don't think there is there isn't at the moment a perfect scenario. I think in the States, they've probably got it better than we have it over here in the UK, which is, again, something I touched on last podcast. They do have it better. But if you can get a loop of holes where two, three holes, whatever it may be, where you can actually see a difference, that's massive, isn't it?
Yeah, and also one thing that Kyle, my pro, said to me, I was struggling with bunkers, and he said, well, the problem with practicing areas of your game like especially bunkers, you can have a lesson with me and you'll think, well, I've solved that. It could be 6 months till you're in your next bunker.
Yeah, or the bunker stand will be different. It'll be wet, it'll be dry.
So how on earth...
The lip will be bigger.
Are you meant to remember a lesson 6 months ago? So he said, just every time you get 50 range balls, just keep four of them. And just every time, just hit four bunker shots. That way, whenever you find yourself in a bunker, you're not going to be panicking. Because what I used to do is think, right, got that ticked off. I know I'd hit that shot. 6 months later, what am I doing here?
Well, this is a mad one. The golf course in the lake is called Windermere. There's no bunkers on the golf course. Zero bunkers. Yet they have a practice bunker for the members.
Well, I played Berkhamsted, which has got no bunkers.
Oh, really?
And it is such a great course. Really challenging.
I've never played a course with no bunkers.
I think you would love Berkhamsted Golf Course. Because instead of bunkers, they have like little sort of mounds and hills and gorse and... You'll play every short game shot in your locker.
See, that's why I would hate it.
Really?
I love bunkers. I love them because I can play bunker shots pretty sufficiently and often. A bit like what you see out on tour, and I'm not comparing myself to those boys at all. If you're in a nice bunker, you've got a perfect lie. Like, I have no worries about getting it close to the hole, pretty much. Where if it was runoff areas or undulations or, you know, where you've got a chip, I'm just not as good. You know, Royal Lytham, which isn't far from here, they took out of the golf course something like, and I don't want to quote this wrong, but something like 70 bunkers off the golf course, right? And the reason being, it did both things. Bunkers, for the average golfer round there, were a nightmare. Like, if you went in the bunker, I mean, the massive, proper pot bunkers, right? So as an average golfer, you'd go in there and it just wouldn't be fun because you couldn't get up and down. You couldn't get out the thing. Like, they're hard. The pros, when they play the Open there, love the bunkers. It's not a problem for them. Like, they're often, most of the time, if I'm honest, if they want to miss, they probably want to miss in a bunker because, again, it's a perfect lie. So they took all these bunkers out. Therefore, for the average golfer, they love it. Because they can chip onto the green and put it close or putt or whatever, you know, they don't take three shots out of a bunker. The pros don't like it as much because they aren't guaranteed a perfect lie like they would have been in a bunker. So it is very different how you would perceive bunkers. I've never been scared of them personally, but I understand when you see an amateur in there and they're struggling with it and taking three or four out of a bunker, they're not going to do that if they're just chipping off the side of the green. You know.
Well, I think one of the hardest things for an average to high handicapper is convincing your body to hit the ball harder than the distance it's going to go.
Correct. It's daunting, isn't it? Because if it goes wrong...
And that's why you cancel on shots. That's why you pull out of them. That's why you don't commit, because you think, how am I hitting this at full distance to go 25 yards?
Yeah.
And I still really struggle with that.
Do you like bunkers, Guy?
I do. At my old golf club, where I was a member from being like 8 years old to 24 years old, they built a bunker on the side of the chipping green, probably when I was about 12, 13 maybe. And at that age, anything new in the practice area was like, it was ridiculous. So weird. The only thing that was a bit silly with it was it had a really deep, probably about 5 foot lip, but like a links course. But then none of the bunkers on that course were like that. But the benefit was, I spent hours in there. I'd literally pour a full practice bag in. We'd have like, it was so good. You just go against a friend, what alternate shot, and just have little comps and stuff. And from that day, I'm not saying the best bunker player in the world, but considering how little I play golf really, bunkers do not scare me at all. I just open the face, it's flat to the floor, aim left. I know it's a more modern way possibly now. Aim left, face flat, hands a little bit low, hit it hard. And I find that I've kind of, I don't say I've not lost it because I've never really had it, but I'm decent.
You almost have natural gauge.
Yeah.
When you're a good player out of bunker, like, I never think I have to swing this hard to hit that shot out of a bunker. I just feel it.
Well, I had that one yesterday, and it wasn't the best shot. Weird par five we had. Yeah, I was in that front bunker. I know I didn't put it super close, but I put it
that
like...
That was a nice shot.
Yeah. And I just didn't... I almost feel weirdly more confident with that than a chip from the same area.
Just been literally, yeah, I mean, Guy just nipped out then. But we've just been talking about the same thing. Like, I feel way more confident with a bunker shot. Yeah.
I think as well, in a way with a bunker shot, I know I'm always going to get out, like, without being funny. That's granted. So maybe my expectations are a bit lower. Like, I'm happy with 6 foot from that shot I had yesterday.
You stiffed on 17.
Yeah, didn't hold the putt annoyingly, but it was a bit of a breaky one. But yeah, I do like bunkers. I think, like anybody, anything over 25, 30 yards, those gets a bit daunting, but I think that's...
I kind of quite like them. Like, I feel like you can just hit it hard, even if you catch it a bit fat, it's not the end of the world. So anyway, bunker's a piece of cake.
I'll bear that in mind.
One thing, I don't know if you've covered this, as I just nipped out then to the bathroom, but one thing a lot of golfers don't do is open the face enough in the sand. Like, I tell my friends, open it to the finish. You might disagree with it, can coach him, but open the face, which is pretty much flat to the surface.
That's what it'll feel like.
Yeah,
anyway,
exactly. Introduce more bounce and open up the face, and they'll do it a little bit, and it's like, no, do it, then grip the club.
Correct. And hit it so hard. Many, you know, so many do not allow for that extra loft because it doesn't look right.
No.
It looks like it's aiming way off to the right. It looks like you're going to blade it. But as Guy mentioned, if you have it flat to the floor and just swing hard and hit a couple of inches behind the golf ball,
you're at least getting out.
100%. And the other thing is, don't stop the ball. As soon as your club hits the sand, don't stop.
Yeah.
Like, make your follow through symmetrical to your backswing, at least sometimes, if not longer. That's what you do go out of bunkers. Your follow through is really good.
Yeah.
Tell you what, one thing that was a big change for me, sort of slightly changing topic, but is that it's okay to have swing thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Because so much of what I've been told is, if you think about your swing during your swing, you're going to mess it up. So I got obsessed with trying to remove every single thought from my head, which is impossible.
Yeah.
And when last time we played, I did an interview with you, which we put on our channel, and I just said, you know, what mantras do you have? And you said, well, I don't really have a mantra, but if I do, it'll be something positive. So now that when I'm swinging, there are just certain words or certain instructions I'll have. So, like, I try to just sense the shaft in the backswing, and I try to be slow. So I'll say, hit slow. And it's actually fine to be thinking that while you're swinging the club. What you can't do is approach the ball and go, right, don't do this, don't do that, don't do that, because you'll invariably do them. But I think that's something, like, accept positive thoughts coming into your head while you're over the ball. And in bunkers especially, I think, for me, is talking myself through the technique is fine. I don't think you can change your swing on the golf course. I think that's a very dangerous road to go down. But if you are remembering a lesson, like your slice lesson, I will actually say to myself, okay, strengthen your grip, cross over those forearms as you go through in my practice. So I'm almost sort of giving myself the lesson before I hit the shot. And that's fine.
Yeah, very rarely over the last, God knows, 20 years, have I stood over a shot out on the golf course with no thought. you have to think something. Like if it's just a little technical thing, if it's just a little feeling of some description.
I've sometimes had ones when it sounds so sad, but you feel almost like a pro golfer. Like yeah. There's one I did today when I played with you. I was feeling like Tommy Fleetwood on my follow through. It would look absolutely nothing like him, but it weirdly felt quite good, and it worked.
Even like walking down the hole, like Rory McIlroy, like he has such a distinctive walk and like bit of a cocky walk, but that's kind of sometimes having that mantra, you kind of feel like you're playing a bit more like that.
I think
player.
It's even like, and this is a silly one, but I always put my glove in my back pocket. There's no reason for it to be there. It could either be on me, put a head cover on the bag, or in my left hand side pocket. But yeah, it's what the tour pros do. And then when I'm playing well, I almost feel like that motion of taking the glove off each finger at a time, flapping the Velcro over, stick it in my back pocket, and I'm playing at a local midweek comp, and I'm probably five over par after nine. But yeah, I feel like I'm Tiger, and I think it just...
I will quite often, after even a 6-foot putt, if I've made it, I'll quite often take the ball out of the hole, just hold it up to the crowd, or with my cat, like they do. I now need to go for a week.
I feel like you used to put with your glove on. You're not now. Sorry,
John. You can go to the toilet in a minute, John.
You sit there, right? So, answer this question.
Putting wise, I've now had four putting lessons from four different people, and I'm going to include the sort of tips you gave me. One said look at the hole, one said look at your thumbnail, one said look at the ball, and one said look at your shoes.
Look at your thumbnail?
Yeah. On the as it goes forward and backwards to get tempo.
Oh my God.
I've really struggled with getting a repeatable routine over my putts.
Oh, you is this what you're going to explain to us that you very nicely demonstrated in the restaurant last night?
Well, the place I'm at the minute is because I was struggling so much with distance control. I thought, well, on any other shot that you're not hitting full, you've got a little mechanical sort of body trigger. So I sort of get my distances from all clubs when my sort of arm comes to about 90 degrees, so that sort of three-quarter length swing. And I was like, well, you need to come up with a way of doing this for your putts, because at the minute, you don't know what a 6-foot putt feels like, what weight a 20-foot putt feels like. So I just watched how far the club goes back if I put my feet together over the putt. So sort of within my left foot, because I'm a left-handed golfer, is sort of up to 6 foot. At the back of my left foot is 6 foot to 9 foot. Whatever, and then I move my feet apart to extend that for longer putts. That has helped because I hold a couple yesterday, which I would never have usually held.
You did, you putted well yesterday.
Just because I have confidence that I'm not going to hit it too hard or even too soft. But so I need that sort of gauge, and that the best I've ever putted is looking at the hole, but that's just not sustainable.
I think it's a weird one with putting, because although that does seem to be working for you, like behind you in the corner there, I know people can't see it, there's a waste paper bin. And on your table there, you've got a few little sugar packets that are obviously for your cup of tea or cup of coffee or whatever. If I said to you now, turn around and throw one of those into the bin, I'm not saying you get it in first time, but your throw would be in the vicinity. If I had to do the same from where Rick sat, which is another 6 foot away, you'd probably still be quite close. And then if I said to stand in the corner of the room, you'd be quite close without any practicing.
But I'd be looking at the bin.
Well, but
I wouldn't look at my hand.
Well, true, but it's almost, you almost know how to throw the item. It's almost like built into us. And I almost feel like, although I'm not the best putter in the world, definitely not, but the more you play golf, I do think to some degree, you just almost, it just becomes, I know you have to learn the greens because every green's different, but that distance almost becomes subconscious to some degree.
Yeah, but you would never be able to do that if you said there's a bin 20 foot away, look at the ball in your hand and get it in that bin. You'd never get it in.
No, that's true.
Also, I'm right-handed, so it would be an absolute nightmare throwing a ball in the bin left-handed.
You can go to the bathroom now if you wish. We'll cut to an ad break. God, that's a joke. We don't have any ads on
We've got a few ads. So we are really excited to announce that this podcast has been brought to you by the Rick Shields Golf Show Instagram page.
Nice. They've always been a big fan of this of the podcast.
Massive. They've supported us in so many ways. So if you are an Instagram user, which I'm sure you are, just search on your Instagram search section for the Rick Shields Golf Show and follow it. You could be in the first 6,000 followers. So when it blows up and have like tens of thousands, maybe 100,000, you can screenshot your number and have that as a little treat.
There you go.
Also, you could follow the Rick Shields official Facebook page, which is literally just Rick Shields Golf. There's daily content on there. There's coaching videos. There's fun videos. There's memes. We're a big fan of memes. I've actually had a promotion recently. I'm Chief Creative Director of Memes at Rick Shields Media.
Chief Memer.
Yeah, so I'm known for...
CEO of memes.
Bringing in some memes on there. And then lastly, second to lastly, there is also, if you're on Facebook, the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast group. So that is a group with about 30,000 people in, where it's partly about the golf podcast that we obviously produce every week on a Tuesday. But it's also a place to, if you've got a new club and you want to flex and show off a little bit to people and say, listen, my new Freewood, I was fitted for it, blah, 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 really enjoying using it, put it on there. And then lastly, we want to promote rating the podcast. So at the moment, the podcast is the number one golf podcast in the UK. And it is number one in loads of other countries. I think it's top five in the USA. And then last week, we actually reached number 12 for all sports podcasts in the UK, which when you think about that, how many football podcasts there are, boxing, rugby, tennis, athletics, just general sport, etc. To get
snooker.
To number... Yeah, snooker, badminton, ice hockey, hockey, field hockey.
Ping pong.
Darts. That's all the sports I know.
Scalextrics.
Formula One. To get to number 12 was massive. So if you rate the podcast through Apple, that really helps the ratings. If we could get inside the top 10 for all sports in the UK, that would be outrageous.
The Rick Shields Golf Show Instagram page will sponsor every single one of your podcasts.
Great. So that's a bit of the self-promotion done. But we do appreciate everyone that's listening and sharing it around.
Well, that was incredible biding of time there.
Yeah.
That really was. What do you think we're going to do today? Do you think we can make a video?
Well, as it stands outside, the
it's
weather's not great.
Horrendous
and
today.
John's just come back from his little visit outside.
His trips to the men's room. I think today might be tricky to make a video, but I think we've got some really cool ideas to do. I'd love to definitely...
We've still got one video that we're not going to say that we want to do with John, which is the
Yeah,
video.
But weirdly, I'm saying we didn't say. Somebody actually commented on the questions.
Oh, did they?
As if they knew.
I don't think so.
All right. We've got that one. There's a few I think we need to do. Maybe a return down south. I insulted you yesterday by calling you a Cockney.
You could
bit.
Be any less Cockney.
Oxbridge. Only because you use a swear word that's very, very Cockney-esque.
Well, I would say that's Northern.
No way. If we say that word up here, I mean, that is...
I thought it's like a term of endearment.
No way.
Oh, that's Glasgow.
No, that word is like... That's the only word my wife is like, don't say that.
Really?
At all, ever. Everything else, I mean, it's fair game. But that word is like... Sacrilege.
Who would have thought saying rhubarb would cause such a stir?
See, that's why you're actually thinking of a funny word then, and my mind went completely blank. I couldn't think of a single word in the dictionary to say then.
How did you go with rhubarb?
Because me and Alex played Sunningdale Heath, which I would recommend to anyone who's in that part of the world. It's next to Wentworth and Sunningdale. It's part of the old Sunningdale course. It used to be their ladies' course. It's a par 58, so it's something like... I can't work out the maths, but it's like 14 par threes, 4 par fours. But it doesn't feel like you're on a short course. It's beautifully landscaped. And we're off the first tee, and this really nice lady was hitting her tee shot, and she hit it into the out of bounds, and she went, "Oh, rhubarb." So all that round, me and Alex, whenever we hit a bad shot, we're going, "That's a load of rhubarb."
I wonder if that has a different terminology. I feel like it does.
Or maybe it was really offensive down there.
Possibly. I think that's it for the podcast today, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. Again, rate the podcast. It's been a pleasure chatting to you again, John. Our goal was to do a 40-minute podcast. We're 1 hour 31.
Okay. Which you're going to have to inevitably cut out a bit of my wisdom, I think.
I think you give too much. That's the
one little cut we need to do. But other than that, keep it all in.
Guys, thanks so much for listening. Stay tuned. Lots more to come. It's been a pleasure again, John. Hopefully safe travels with not too much wafting through the back window as you drive back home. And if we do inevitably do something, we might grab some lunch, go to driving range or do something. Make sure you... We'll post a bit on the Rick Shields Instagram podcast.
Make sure you follow Bad Golf.
Yeah, follow at Bad Golf
Forgot
Channel
about that.
On YouTube, Facebook, and no, not Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram.
You could have sponsored the podcast if we'd have known. We'll see you all soon. Peace out.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.